Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Emily, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The title of today's forum is Neighborhood Elections or Count My Vote. Now I'd like to introduce Bryce Christensen, Chairman of the University of Utah College Republicans, who will be moderating today's forum.
Thank you, Emily. So, as many of you know, there is a debate in Utah right now about whether or not the nomination system in Utah has changed. There are two campaigns. There's the Count My Vote campaign, which aims to change the system as we have it, and Protect Our Neighborhood Elections, which aims to keep the system that we have. So the idea of today's event, it is not a debate, it is for information, how you can get involved, what each side is about, and why they're right. And so what we have is two presenters. We have the executive director of the Count My Vote campaign, Taylor Morgan. He will be speaking first. He'll be speaking for 25 minutes. And then after he goes, we'll have James Humphreys. He's the public relations director for Neighborhood Elections. So after that, Taylor Morgan will have a couple of minutes to rebut anything James may have said, and then we will close. So with that, I would like to introduce the executive director for the Count My Vote campaign, Taylor Morgan.
Thanks, Bryce. Can you hear me okay? Am I on mic? Good, Jane? It is great to be back at the Hinckley Institute. I went to school at the University of Utah and did a Hinckley internship as an undergrad, and then after that had an opportunity to come back to the Hinckley and work for a short time here, and I love the Hinckley Institute, favorite place. So it's great to be here, and it's nice to see so many students out. Hopefully you're getting involved in the Hinckley Institute and in its programs, because they will change your life for the better, so make sure you do that. I'm excited to be here today and talk about Count My Vote. I see a number of folks from both sides of this issue today, and so I think that's fantastic. If anything, if we're creating some dialogue in talking about this issue and how we choose our candidates, I think that's a net positive. So grateful to have folks from both sides here today, and hope y'all walk away with some new information and some understanding on this, because it is a very, very important issue. I began researching and working on the issue of Utah's nomination process actually when I started here at the Hinckley Institute back in 2009. We had, you know, there's a lot of concern because Utah had gone from being a very high voter participation state to one of the bottom five, bottom 10 states in the nation in terms of voter participation. And that's just not the Utah that I knew. That's not the Utah we know. Utahns are involved in their communities, and they care about issues. And so why is it that Utah is a bottom 10 state in terms of voter participation? And so I started to look into this issue, and it eventually and ultimately led to me becoming passionate about the issue of making sure that all Utah voters get to participate in the process. And so that's what I want to talk to you about today. The purpose of Count My Vote is to make sure that all Utah voters have a voice in our elections, to make sure that everyone has an equal voice in choosing candidates for office. Again, like I said, this all comes down to the fundamental underlying issue of voter participation. So my presentation today, which I'm going to go through quite quickly, I want to make sure we have time to answer any questions that you have. I have a lot of information here, but I'll breeze through some of it quickly, so please feel free to ask any questions you may have. It's broken down into three parts. I want to talk about this voter participation issue. I then want to talk about the current system and how it is a barrier to participation in Utah. And then I want to talk about exactly what Count My Vote is and how it would increase participation. So we know that a state's election system, it can either be a barrier that hinders participation in elections, or it can encourage voter participation. Utah's current system is a barrier to participation. It hinders participation. And we'll walk through exactly how and why. As I already mentioned, our historically high rate of voter participation has declined in recent decades. From 1960 to 1998, we were always above the national average in terms of voter participation. In past decades, we were a top five state for voter participation. Now we're bottom 10. Since 1998, our voter participation rate has been below the national average. Just a couple weeks ago, actually, again, for the eighth consecutive year, Utah was ranked the number one state for volunteerism and community service. And usually that correlates directly to a high rate of voter participation, but that's not the case in Utah. Our other economic indicators should also correlate to high voter participation, but they don't. Utah's the exception in the nation. Here we see Utah's voter participation over the decades. Again, Utah's participation is the blue line here, and it's dropping below the national average. And if you look closely, in the 90s, up through 1996 and 1998 and 2000, you can see where this drop happens precipitously and where we start to fall under the national average. There are some key things that political parties have done over the last few decades that actually have contributed to that drop. We'll talk about them. The system we have now has been in place for almost 100 years, with a brief period from 1937 to 47, when we had a different kind of a primary system. But with that exception, this system has been in place essentially since 1896. Yeah, I do. What numbers?
Well, when we had a direct primary, do you have the numbers from 37 to 47?
Which numbers?
The numbers that you showed in 1960 here.
No. I don't know anybody that does. I'd love to see them. But no. So, again, as we can see from this chart, this is a unique problem to Utah. Okay, our participation in Utah is declining relative to other states. So this is something unique to Utah. Because, yeah, voter participation follows certain trends and ebbs and flows on a national level. But Utah's participation is declining relative to all that in the nation. So there's something unique going on here in Utah. It's a Utah-specific issue. So political scientists and others have done a bit of research into this. They looked at this issue. What we do know is that Utah is the only state in the nation that allows political parties to totally preclude primary elections for statewide and national office. There's not a single other state in the country that allows political parties to do that. Utah's the only one. There's a handful of states that do use a caucus convention system in some way, but no other state totally wipes out all voters in primaries for statewide and national office. You know, a lot of people think that, well, is it because we're a young state? Utah has the youngest median age in the country. Well, that's always been the case. And our participation has declined over time. So that's not the issue. These are some points that Utah data points. Kelly Patterson and Quinn Monson, two great political scientists at BYU, researched. Another common misconception is that this is because we're a one-party state. We're a Republican state. And that means we have less competitive elections. And so people just don't care as much because they assume the Republican is going to win. Well, the reality is 38 other states are also one-party states, yet their participation rates are much higher than Utah's. The reality is, being a one-party state, if most voters don't get to help participate or choose who that party's candidate will be, then when you get to the general election ballot, the deck is stacked, the choice has been made, and what's the point of voting? So the caucus system, and by virtue of the changes the political parties have implemented, going from 80% threshold, okay, back when this system began, to secure nomination at convention, you had to receive 80% of the delegates' votes. It was intended to be a culling mechanism to make sure that you had a reasonable amount of support. And the only way you could avoid a primary was if you had 80% of all the delegates agreed that you were the candidate. Well, the parties over time changed that. They went from 80% to 70% and to 60%, where we are now. And so what that means is that as a candidate, to even force a primary election, you have to get 40% of your party's delegates' votes. That's the highest barrier to entry upon candidates in the nation. The few states that do have a caucus convention system, the next highest barrier is 30%. And even then, all the statewide and national candidates still are guaranteed a primary, whereas in Utah, that's not the case. So Utah has the most restrictive, the most exclusionary nomination system in the country. And again, here's just a general chart with some of the key moments in election legislation. What we see on a national level over time is we see the process being opened to more and more voters, whereas in Utah, we see it being closed and limited to fewer and fewer party insiders. So we have reverse trends in our elections, and that has resulted in a decline in participation in Utah's elections. Now, as I mentioned, Utah's caucus system is this barrier to participation. It's the barrier in these five ways, and we'll go through each of these here. Simply put, the caucus system is antiquated. This is not how we participate in politics anymore. There's a lot of great things about the caucus system. I'm a Republican Party state delegate myself. I've been involved in this process, and I, you know, will speak to its virtues. I think there's a lot of positives. But the negatives of the system, I believe, far outweigh the positives. We don't participate in elections this way. 100 years ago, if you didn't get to the ballot on election day, too bad, right? You didn't plan sufficiently, you didn't get there, and you couldn't vote. But we have since modernized that. We have early voting. We have by-mail voting. And we have online voting for our military and our overseas voters. Now, the Republican Party has made some changes to open the caucus system up. But it still makes it very difficult for those who can't be physically present at the caucus meeting to participate. It's an antiquated system. We have the tools in place now in our primary elections so that everybody can participate. As students, if you have a class on the night of your caucus meeting and you can't participate, you're cut out. You can potentially send a ballot with your driver's license, with a unique PIN perhaps that the party sent to you, if you're a Republican, with a friend who's in the same precinct who's going to that caucus meeting, and then you can cast a vote in just the first round of balloting for your delegate. Well, what they've done is they've made an already very complicated, confusing system even more difficult to understand. Whereas in a primary election, you get to vote by mail, early voting, or on election day at your polling place. Standard uniform elections. The caucus system is just antiquated, and lipstick on a pig doesn't make it any better. Again, we have the most restrictive system in the nation. 40% of delegates' votes required to get on a primary ballot. We have the most difficult, restrictive, and the most expensive system for candidates in the country right now. And again, like I said, no other state in the nation allows political parties to prevent primary elections for statewide and national office. The current system excludes Utah's military voters. We have approximately 6,000 UACAVA voters, overseas and military voters in Utah right now. Those voters participate in elections at a higher rate than the average voter. Yet, they are excluded from the caucus system. The Republican Party attempted to address this issue, and their fix is, well, they can call our office and we'll work it out. That's their fix. It's just not realistic. In a direct primary election, all these military and overseas voters can vote online, on a website dedicated specifically for them. We already have that resource available now to them, and they should be able to participate in choosing candidates. This is a big one. Women are the majority of voters in Utah elections. Women are also the majority of affiliated voters in both major parties. Yet in the ranks of the delegates for both major parties, women are severely underrepresented. Only 25% of all Republican Party state delegates are women. 43% of Democratic state party all Democratic delegates are women. So women are the majority of our voters, but yet they're a severe underrepresented minority in the ranks of our delegates. And the delegates control the process by which our candidates are selected for office. So it's no wonder that we were just ranked the 49th state out of 50 in women in politics. It's no wonder. So in primary elections, they are now, women will be far more influential. They'll have more of a voice in primary elections. Now, students, young voters, you all get a bad rap for not voting, and you deserve it. Just, I'll throw that out there. However, when it comes to the caucus system, you're even more underrepresented. In elections, young voters constitute 15% of the votes cast in our elections. It's still pretty bad. But when you look at the caucus system, young voters are only 2% of all the delegates. That's both parties. So no wonder your interests aren't being met, because you really don't have any say in how the candidates are selected for office. Okay, so I do want to talk a little bit about the current system, just very briefly lay out how it works, and then talk about some of the claimed benefits of the current system and then the reality. So the current system, you go to your neighborhood caucus meeting. It's held in March each year, usually a Tuesday or Thursday night. And at that neighborhood caucus meeting, you vote to select delegates, state and county delegates, who then represent you at your party's convention. At that convention, the delegates vote on candidates. A candidate who receives 60% of delegates' votes goes automatically to the general ballot to be that party's nominee. If a candidate receives less than 60%, or another candidate receives more than 40%, thus securing a primary election ballot in June, and then the voters in that party, dictated by the party rules, get to then vote on that party's nominee. And whoever gets the most votes in that primary goes to the general election ballot. So essentially in Utah right now, we have four distinct separate election cycles. We have the caucus meeting, we have the convention, a potential primary, and a general. And the current system, those who support the current system claim some of these benefits. They claim that it provides more direct contact between the candidates and the delegates. They claim that these delegates are trusted representatives of their neighbors. They believe, or they like to claim, that somehow this would hurt rural voters, that it would create flyover areas in the state. A potential benefit is that it maintains the purity of the party platform. And then finally, the argument that we hear the most is that those who oppose Count My Vote somehow believe that the current system limits the influence of money in elections, which is a fallacy that we'll talk about. So right now we have 0.3% of our voters choosing candidates for everyone. So yes, that group has more direct contact with candidates because they're such a small group. So that's a positive. As a state delegate myself, I like that. Right? I love it. I'm important. I matter. I get a ton of materials. I get a ton of swag from candidates. I'm super important. I really like it. But what it means is that none of you matter. If you're not a delegate, you simply don't matter. I've managed legislative campaigns before, and I've told my candidate every time, don't waste a second or a penny talking to someone who's not a delegate, because they can't help you. So what does that mean? It means the rest of voters, over 99% of voters, are not engaged. The candidates do not engage them because those voters don't have a say in nominating them. And that's a problem. Participation in Utah's caucus meetings is pitiful. Over the last 10 years, the average participation rates in our general elections, it's 40%, 44% of our voting population. In primary elections, it's 15%. In municipal elections, which are traditionally the hallmark of the lowest measure of participation in a state, municipal participation is 14% over the last 10 years. Caucus meeting participation over the last 10 years has averaged 4% of our voting population. So you have 4% of voters participating in the process of electing these delegates. The delegates then constitute 0.3% of the voting population, but yet they have complete control over the process by which candidates are selected. You have a very, very small, tiny handful of voters that have disproportionate influence and power in the selection process, and what that does is it leaves everyone out. the average voter doesn't have a voice in our process. Rural voters, this is an interesting argument. Today, the reality is parties apportion delegates based on population and affiliation. And so we see right now that all state delegates combined, 75% of those delegates live along the Wasatch Front. They're urban delegates. Only 25% of delegates live in rural areas of Utah. And so when we talk about this flyover notion, it would only apply to statewide elections, right? Because the idea is that somehow because a candidate can get more votes in an urban area, they would ignore a rural area. Well, look at the numbers. That's how it is right now. You only have to get 60% of those delegates' votes to secure your nomination. Where are you going to go to get them? If 75% of those delegates are concentrated in urban areas, that's your focus. You have to remember the barrier to get on a primary ballot is 40%. So all rural delegates combined, from Box Elder to St. George, and those delegates, I'll tell you what, they have different priorities. Okay, they're not going to necessarily vote in a block. Even still, all those rural delegates combined don't get you to securing a primary. They're only 25%. In the Republican Party, it's 28%. So right now, rural voters have far less of a voice. 400,000 rural voters will have more of a voice than 1,500 rural delegates. So the rural argument is a fallacy. Education is an issue. The reality is this very small group of delegates, they simply don't represent the priorities or the values of the voters. Dan Jones and Associates did some studies. The Utah Foundation did reports on these in 2010 and 2012. What they found is that among all voters in both parties, independent voters, their number one issue was improving the quality of education. Number one issue across the board. When Republican delegates were asked, they ranked education as their 11th priority. Their top priorities were gun rights, state rights, mining and grazing on federal lands. Even getting us out of the United Nations came four spots ahead of improving education in Utah. And when they were asked again in 2012, the Republican delegates were the only group that didn't include education in their top five priorities. So there's a disparity. These delegates who control the process of selecting candidates, they simply don't represent the priorities of the voters. This is a biggie. The money issue is important. We hear a lot about from those who oppose Count My Vote that it would bring money in elections. It would give money too much power and too much influence. And I'll tell you today, I'll stand right here and acknowledge the fact that in primary elections, yeah, it's true, more money will probably be spent. But that's because you'll have more candidates competing and engaging more voters. You'll suddenly have candidates that are actually reaching out to you as voters rather than concentrating all their efforts on a tiny handful of delegates. Just last year, Republican Party statewide candidates spent $6.5 million to secure 60% of the delegates' votes. That's 2,483 delegates. That means about $2,600 was spent per delegate vote. So you want to talk about money and influence. Right now, you have a lot of money in the system. Utah doesn't have any campaign finance limits right now. So you have a ton of money in the system, and all that money is concentrated in a very tiny group of delegates. In a primary election, yes, it's probable that more money will be spent. If you double this amount of money in a Republican state primary, you're talking about $20 per voter. So which system actually gives money more influence? $5 million of the $6.5 was spent by Orrin Hatch. Why? Because he didn't like the delegates. And when you have a fixed pie of delegates that you can expand upon, guess what? If you spend enough money, you can replace those delegates with your people. That's what he did. That's wrong. Our voters should be choosing our candidates instead of our candidates handpicking their voters. So the Count My Vote Citizens Initiative, how much time do I have, by the way? Do I have cards going up in 1 minute? Okay, great. I don't want to go over time. So count my vote. It was important to our group that we didn't just force this change, that we tried to effect change through the legislature. We tried to effect change through the political parties. Well, the legislature refused to act, not surprisingly, because our legislators are elected by delegates. They're accountable to those delegates. So when we met with them, they would, in public, they would say, can't support you. They'd pull us into the office, close the door, and say, you've got to do this because I can't be beholden to these delegates anymore. We need change. But we're not asking them to support us, and they can't pass policy. There will be bills this session, and we'll watch them, but the fact of the matter is the legislature refused to act. We then went to the political parties. Last year in May, both parties voted on this issue. A majority of delegates in both parties actually voted for reform, but the party bylaws require a two-thirds supermajority. So change was not affected at convention. Again, as I explained, the Republican Party, they have made some adjustments, but they're just insufficient. So we are left at a last resort, and that is a citizens' initiative petition, which is very, very difficult. We're trying to gather 120,000 signatures around the state. We have to get at least 102,000 in 26 of the 29 state Senate districts. If we do get those signatures, it doesn't pass it automatically. What it does is it puts this issue on the ballot in November so that the voters can decide. So whether you support Count My Vote and you want direct primaries or whether you like the current system, you know, we would encourage you to sign the petition so that in November the voters actually can weigh in on this and the voters can make a decision so that we can vote whether we want to have the current system or direct primaries. So we'll skip ahead a little bit to our system. This is what it would look like. To become a nominee, to become a candidate on a primary ballot for my party, I need to gain nominating signatures of 2% of the parties of the voters affiliated with my party in my jurisdiction. In the average state House district, that's about 50 to 100 signatures. In the average state Senate district, it's anywhere from 50 to 130 signatures of my fellow voters in my party. What Count My Vote does is it takes the power to nominate candidates from a small group of delegates and applies it to all voters in the party. And all those candidates who are then nominated by their fellow party voters go on a primary election ballot in which all the voters in that party get to help choose the candidate. And whoever gets the most votes goes on the primary. The caucus convention system could remain, but it could only endorse candidates. I think I'm out of time. Okay. We will stop there. Do I have, am I doing any questions now or I'm doing them after James goes?
We'll have James go now and then we'll, we might have time to come back, but.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bryce.
Yep.
All right, now we'll introduce James Humphreys. He's the Public Relations Director for the Protect Our Neighborhood Elections Campaign.
I got it.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm really glad to be here. I'm thankful to Bryce and the College Republicans for having us today. I'm also grateful to the Hinckley for hosting this It sounds absolutely beautiful on the surface, which, you know, I'm grateful for. You know the slams are coming. It's just love. That being said, there are a number of things that we should talk about on how the system itself works. And I'm going to walk around. I don't like being stuck behind a podium. And I'm going to use the board to go through a few things that I think will be interesting. Just going through a couple of notes that I saw on things that I heard. There's a lot of really good stuff there.
Can I see your little thing? Mm-hmm. I think it might be on mute. I'm sorry.
Not on, huh? There, is that better? Can everyone hear me all right now? All right. So, a few things. First, I love the idea of Count My Vote. We want more participation, more people enjoying and engaging the process. It's a fantastic idea.
As is always the problem with legislation, the devil's in the details. Details which you haven't heard yet. And that is always the problem you have when we have big 30,000-foot level views. So let's talk about the truth versus the myths. Our current system, he's correct. There are four different ways, sometimes five, actually, in which someone may choose to participate in the current system. They may go to a caucus night and vote for a delegate or run as a delegate themselves. They can go to a convention, participate in a convention, and try and help nominate or elect both candidates and party officers and enact change to how policy is handled inside the party. They can participate in a primary. Contrary to popular belief, there are a lot of primaries, especially at the statewide level, especially for the races that are ones that everyone cares about, like the U.S. Senate and the governor's race, etc. And then they can vote in a general election. Now, one of the big comments you hear all the time is that a direct primary is going to increase voter turnout. How? We already have a primary. Well, it'll increase voter turnout because, A, there'll be more primaries because we limit them. You know, Utah's the only state that makes sure no one can be in a primary. Well, let's see. The Senate race last year was a primary. The Senate race before that was a primary. The governor's race 2 years ago was a primary. About the only time you don't see a primary in the big races that matter in Utah is when you have a large incumbent running, and if for some reason the population doesn't like incumbents, they get challenged. Which leads us to myth number two, which is the money issue. So I'm actually going to talk about the money issue. I love the money issue. He's correct. $6.5 million was spent. He's correct. $5 million of that money was Senator Hatch. Despite spending $5 million, after sitting in the living rooms of people like you and me and others here and answering questions for hours at a time and standing around at 7 a.m. breakfasts on a Wednesday morning, Senator Hatch couldn't convince 60% of the delegates that he deserved six more years unchallenged. Think about that for a moment. He could not convince 60% of a small group of people he deserved six more years unchallenged in his own party. That's a big deal. After spending $5 million to try and change all of those delegates and working very hard, he couldn't do that. So I was one of those delegates, just like Taylor. I was a Hatch supporter. I don't know whether Taylor was or not. I willingly admit I was a Hatch supporter. I voted for Dan Lilienquist both times because the selfish, right-wing, whack job delegate that I am, my constituents in my precinct were split. I talked to them every time I met with a candidate. I asked the people who had attended caucus night, well, here, this is what I'm hearing. I emailed them, I called them, I know them, they're my neighbors. I don't know all of them, but I know a good fair, and I met a lot more. And they were so evenly split on whether or not Hatch or Lilienquist should be the nominee that I didn't feel I had the right to make that decision for them. They'd entrusted me with making a choice, and the choice I made was to ensure there was a primary. Yeah, selfish, egocentric delegate. That's me. And guess what? Hatch went to a primary. And in that primary, as is common, not only did he outspend his opponent 3-1, he also won with 65% of the vote because he outspent his opponent 3-1 and clearly had a lot more name recognition. Utahns, no matter the system we look at, like incumbents. 91% of all people who are incumbents that run in Utah over the last 30 years or so wins. That's true. Unfortunately, some of those incumbents actually have to answer for their votes. And they don't answer for it to the people that are paying for their mailers or television ads. They answer for it to people sitting in this room. Now, let's talk about minority representation. I love the women argument. I was caught off guard the first time I had this conversation with Taylor. Totally caught off guard. Yeah, I won't be again. Here's the thing. He's right. 53% of the voting population is women. That's true. In addition to that, 25, 26% of Republican delegates are women. That's also true. 43% of Democrat state delegates are women. That's also true. Here's the key challenge, which we all have problems with. How many women ran on caucus night? We don't know. And how many of those women who ran won? We don't know. We know how many total got in, but we don't know what percentage that is. So let's talk about something we do know with regard to women. Jackie Biskupski helps to run a whole bunch of wonderful organizations, and one of them is involving women in politics. They just had a wonderful forum on Saturday. They tracked 400 municipal races in 2013 in Utah. 400. Of the 400 municipal races, 95 had women in them. That's less than 25%. Terribly underrepresented. Absolutely true. Whose fault is that? Second, 65% of those 95 women got elected. What does that tell us? If women run, they win. That's what it tells us. We don't have that data with regard to our delegate count. It's unfortunate that we don't have all that data, but that data matters. Statistics, true or untrue, without context, are irrelevant. And that's the problem. Young people, 15% of the voting population, 2% of delegates. That's also true. Absolutely. Okay. 15% of the voting in the general election, which had twice the turnout of the primary. 2% of delegates is the correct number, but we should know what percentage of young people voted in the primary in order to compare apples to apples. Now, it's going to be higher than 2%. That's absolutely true. And so we have to ask ourselves why. And he's correct. Why is because the parties had an older closed system. You're correct about that as well. An older closed system. And we recognize that. Now, the Count My Vote solution, he also brought forward, they're correct. They tried legislatively to manage this. And the legislature, for whatever their reasons, was not interested in changing the system. That's also true. And it is true that they made demands of the Republican Party to change their system. That is also true. We have the emails with their list of criteria pre-convention, two or three of them, that say, hey, if you do X, Y, and Z, then we won't run a citizen initiative. That's true. They didn't ask that of Democrats. Only Republicans. And none of the people who supported Count My Vote worked the delegates to sell their idea. They sent us a list of demands. The delegates, naturally, found that a little challenging. I was one of them. I had a kidney transplant on April 23rd here at the University of Utah, and on May 15th, I was sitting at the South Town Expo Center voting when I shouldn't have been because I took my responsibility seriously as a state delegate. And the statewide races went to a primary. The auditor's race went to a primary. The attorney general's race went to a primary. The U.S. Senate race went to a primary. Congressional 4, Mia Love beat Carl Wimmer, didn't go to a primary. That's true. Hindsight's always 20/20. I wonder what kind of primary would have Mia Love and Carl Rove would have looked like. Would people have, or not, sorry, Carl Wimmer, my mistake. Would anybody have wanted to see Carl Wimmer running for Congress? It's a fair question, but some challenge. Again, the statistic is correct, but without context is irrelevant. There are some wonderful things that I love. Here's one. Senate District 28. It's a wonderful graphic from Count My Vote. It says, all 50,953 voters being able to choose candidates is better than 97 delegates. That's true. It's a great statement. It's also complete bunk. 50,593 is the total number of registered voters in the district. 50,593 cannot vote in a Republican primary. And the Count My Vote petition doesn't fix that. So even if it passes, 50,593 still can't vote in a Republican primary. 35,000 can vote in a Republican primary. Now, was there a primary recently? Oh, yes. In 2012, there was a primary in this same Senate district. 14,000 people showed up to that primary. The incumbent actually lost in the primary. It was Casey Anderson. He'd been a senator for 1 year. He replaced a previous senator who unfortunately passed away in office. He was replaced via the delegates for that year and then was held for election the following year, and the delegates were unable to make a decision, even in the 60-40 race, to decide who should be the nominee for their party, and they sent the race to a primary. And in that primary, 14,000 voters showed up, and those 14,000 voters in a 65-35 race selected the current senator over Senator Anderson. The system works as currently designed. Now, why would that make a difference? Why does that matter? Here's why it matters. You think about hiring someone for a job interview. Job interviews are a good thing. But in a large organization with hundreds of thousands of people, you don't have all hundreds of thousands of people decide who's going to get picked for job A or job B. You have little subcommittees that do those kinds of things for you. Now, they don't pick the ultimate candidate, but what they do is they narrow that candidate list down. Narrowing the candidate list is vitally important because we don't want to waste everyone's time with someone who's clearly not competent enough to get elected, i.e. Sharon Angle in Nevada, who couldn't beat Harry Reid when we could have run a toaster against him in 2010. We could have run a toaster against Harry Reid and won, and we lost because with 32% of the vote, Sharon Angle, who was a complete nut job, completely unprepared for the race, won in Nevada without a majority, which Count My Vote supports, won without a majority, got the party's nominee, even though she didn't represent the majority of the party, and went on to lose one of the easiest races that the Republicans could have picked up in 2010. Same thing happened in Missouri in 2012. Todd Akin, heaven forbid, the man thought women could choose to not get pregnant after they were raped. Seriously, who elects somebody like this? Haven't they taken basic biology in school? And he won with like 41% of the vote. Again, not a majority. And, oh, lo and behold, Senator McCaskill, who was pretty much writing a resignation speech, had life. And what? Missouri? They reelected Senator McCaskill, the Democrat from Missouri. Another guaranteed win. Not to mention it did wonderful things for Mitt Romney's presidential campaign to have a Republican nominee running around telling people that women could choose not to get pregnant when they were raped. Oy. I mean, we are our own worst enemy in the GOP in that respect. But let's be honest about that process. Two candidates who didn't win majorities, who didn't represent their party, who were completely unprepared, thoroughly unvetted, and made a national mockery of a national party, and lost two guaranteed wins. And that's only two of 4 to 6 examples I could give you. So again, the same thing, 50,000. So they have another one that I love, which is exactly the same thing. It's the one for the entire state that says 1,980,790 voters being able to choose is better than 4,004 delegates. Again, context, 1,900,000 is the total number of voters. It's not the total number of Republicans.
It's also not representative of the percentage of Republicans who showed up to the primary. In fact, using this number, we'd have to have 100% voter turnout, and Utah has never in its history had 100% voter turnout. Never. So it's a wonderful thing to say. It is also intellectually dishonest. The statistic, without context, is irrelevant. I want women to be more represented. I want young people to be more represented. I think it would be good for us to figure out why they are not. I think assuming that they're not, because we don't have proportional balloting, we're not a parliamentary system, is a mistake. We need more data to understand why they're not and then to fix that problem. They are also correct. The Republican Party made some adjustments. We hope the Democrats will follow. The Democrats were the first to lower the threshold from 70 to 60% about 15 years ago or so, and the Republican Party followed the year later, which is typical. We hope that the changes the GOP has made this year will encourage the Democrats to also make those changes, to include military and overseas voters to have the opportunity to participate in caucus. Let's be clear, what we're talking about is doing away with two of the 4 to 5 potential voting areas for the public. Now, we are also talking about 4,000 delegates, and those 4,004 delegates were chosen by 125,000 Republicans. It doesn't count the 3,500, 2,700 unique Democrat delegates or the 50,000 Democrats who went to caucus night in 2012 either. It discounts their participation completely because obviously they don't matter. They only chose those 4,000 and only the 4,000 made a difference. There is some truth to that from the standpoint of candidates, as Taylor said. I've said the same thing. I'm a political operative. I've told candidates, hey, before convention, you spend all your time with delegates. You know what I tell people during primary elections? I say, all your voters live in Draper. So don't care about Rose Park, because Draper's where the votes are. Go to Draper. That's what I tell them. They have the highest voter turnout in the county. So that's where you go. That's the truth. If you want to get a hold of people in Rose Park, send a surrogate out to Westfest or whatever. March the parade. But you don't have time to spend in Westfest's parade this year. They don't have enough voter turnout. 25% versus 35 or 40%. The same thing is true in a primary as it is in convention for all candidates. You have the candidate spend their time where it's most valuable. I just ran a few municipal elections, and sadly I did the same thing. Ogden City is a very polarized city. The east side of Harrison Boulevard in Ogden, all the votes are on the east side of Harrison, all along the city, so the whole east side matters. The two candidates who were running for city council that I was working with both won. Where did they win? They won all the precincts that were on the east side of Harrison Boulevard. Why did it make a difference? Because those precincts had high voter turnout. Why do they have high voter turnout? Because they always have high voter turnout. We know exactly what households vote, how often they vote, in what races they choose to vote in. It's a municipal primary. We're only going to target voters who vote in historically municipal primaries. So we're going to call them. We're going to knock on their doors. We're going to send them a mailer. That's what we do in a primary. Did she go downtown? No. Does downtown matter? Yes. Will she be making decisions about downtown Ogden? Absolutely. Did she spend any time in downtown Ogden? No. Why? No voters. That's the truth. That's how campaigning works. The 75-25 rural delegate thing. Here's why that doesn't matter. You're right, 60%, I could only focus on the Wasatch Front. It's true. But I was helping a congressional candidate in 2012. Congressional candidate working in District 2. There's one voter who is a delegate, state delegate, in Wendover. One. Guess what? All 8 candidates who are running for Congressional 2 went to Wendover to meet that one delegate. There was 999 total state delegates available in Congressional 2. All 8 of them trying to get 60% of those delegates. Every delegate, no matter where they were in the district, mattered. It happened to be that the state delegate in that district
was the mayor of Wendover. We got out there, took us an hour and a half to drive there, figured we might as well enjoy our time, although it's Wendover, not a lot to do, for heaven's sakes. But what did he do? He drove us around the entire town. He showed us all of the disparity between West Wendover and Wendover, Nevada. There's not a candidate running for Congressional 2, including Chris Stewart, who became congressman, who does not intimately know what's wrong in Wendover. Wendover has virtually no population, very few votes. Is there any chance that Wendover would have been paid attention to if they hadn't gone out to talk to the one delegate when they could have gotten a couple hundred votes at most, probably 100, compared to Salt Lake City or Bountiful? But that one delegate in that one rural place made a big impact on each of those candidates and how they saw that area of the state in that district. Does Chris Stewart remember that conversation? The answer is yes. I talked with him last week about it. He cares an awful lot about what's happening at the old military airfield in Wendover. Why? Because he walked it and saw what was wrong with it. And why did he go there? Because there was one delegate. And that delegate knew what was going on in their local community and it made a difference. The people who show up make a difference. Taking time to do that first job interview and vet all those people who want to run is valuable. Cutting the number of times any voter may choose to participate in the process from 4 to 2 limits your options, doesn't expand them, limits them. Not guaranteeing a majority winner to ensure that the person who represents the party represents the majority of the party is undemocratic. There are 38 states, 39 I think it is now, 38 states that do direct primaries in the fashion that we're discussing, with either a runoff or without one. The current proposal is without a runoff. 18% of House members are women, 20% of the Senate is women. Don't tell me that makes it more representative or less representative. The statistic is irrelevant. Do we need more women in politics? Yes. Do we need to do something to ensure that there are more women in politics? Absolutely. Are we doing what we need to? The answer is no. Is the proposal we're proposing now going to do it? The answer is no. Now remember, if you even like the idea of count my vote, you have to do something else. You have to remember how many other things have to change. So if you want a majority win, then the legislature or parties have to fix that afterwards. How do we replace people now who are in the legislature? For example, we just replaced Derek Brown, who went to work for Mike Lee. The delegates in that local area chose someone, and then next year that person will have to stand for re-election, but they'll stand for re-election as an incumbent. What percentage of incumbents get re-elected if they run? Oh yeah, 91. So the delegates will have selected that person. What kind of delegates will be left if the nominating power is taken from them? And what kind of people will they replace? You guys probably don't know, but almost 20% of the entire current state legislature was originally appointed either by the governor, and then 6 years ago we changed the law from the governor to more local individuals by using delegates. So I hope that you see that there's a far more rippling effect in this. And remember what's most important in this discussion. The idea of expanding participation should not limit the number of times you can vote, nor should it guarantee you don't get a majority winner. Thank you for your time.